Blog Talk Radio.
I'm not a hunter, but I'm told that in places like in the Arctic, where indigenous people sometimes might hunt a wolf, they'll take a double-edged blade and they'll put blood on the blade and they'll melt the ice and stick the handle in the ice so that only the blade is protruded, and that a wolf will smell the blood and wants to eat, and it'll come and lick the blade trying to eat. And what happens is when the wolf licks the blade, of course, he cuts his tongue and he bleeds. And he thinks he's really having a good meal. He drinks and he licks. And of course, he's drinking his own blood and he kills himself. That's what the imperialists did to us with crack cocaine. You got these young brothers out there thinking that they're getting something that they're going to make a living with. They're getting something they can buy a car like the white people have cars. Why can't I have a car? They're getting something so they can get a piece of gold. The white people have gold. Why can't I have gold? They're getting something to get a house. The white people have a house. Why can't I have a house? And they actually think that it's something that's bringing resources to them, but they're killing themselves just like the wolf who's licking the blade, and they're slowly dying without knowing. That's what's happening to the community. You with me on that? That's exactly and precisely what happens to the community. And instead of blaming the hunter who put the damn handle and the blade in the ice for the wolf, that what happens is the wolf gets blamed for trying to live. That's what happens in our community. You don't blame the person, the victim, you blame the oppressor. Imperialism, white power is the enemy. Was the enemy when it first came to Africa, snatched up the first African, brought us here against our will, is the enemy today. That's the thing that we have to understand.
Tonight, so if we have some technical difficulties, please call back in. You're welcome, and you're tuned in to No Covers on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Daoud Elamine Muhammad, coming to you live out of the Port City of Wilmington, North Carolina. This is No Covers on Blog Talk Radio. Our call-in line tonight is 858-947-6607. That's 858-947-6607. If you'd like to talk to the host tonight, this particular show is dedicated to Django. Before we go there, let's give you some concept and background for you all that might be calling in to the first time. I see we've got some callers on the air of what No Covers is. If you go to our Facebook page, you might have got this ad on Facebook. It says No Covers. You're seeing that picture, a graphic illustration of what No Covers is about. I keep that photograph in front of me every day to explain to us where we're at. In 1555, we were brought to these shores of America, chained up in slaves of ships. When I wrote the program No Covers, I happened to think one day how it felt to be in that ship. Here you are on a ship going to a land unknown. It's cold, it's wet. Every time the ship is trying through the wintertime, it's, the water's splashing. And every time it splashes, it's cold and you got no covers. You're just naked. You don't have any covering on you. You're just exposed to all of the conditions there are, and you're just as naked as can be. They bring you out, take you off the ships, naked with no covering, uncovered, and they put you on this block and expect you like cattle, go through your teeth and your body parts. No kind of decency is given to you at all. You're just uncovered. You have no covers. You have no respect. Everything is stripped from you. Everything that you know about yourself was taken from you. Your land, your mother, your family was stripped and taken. You're uncovered. And here we are in 2012 on the right side of the picture, and we're being uncovered again. Our African-American black men or black men around the country are just going into a prison system, a prison where they're being uncovered, a prison where they have no respect, they have no dignity. Black people have no morality within the day. We're just in the same condition from 1555 to 2012, in the same state of affairs, uncovered, unchained, really. And here we are in this country. So No Covers comes to uncover the truth, to be a program that you can be as free as you want to on it. You can say what you want to. You can express your opinion. You can get, it's a therapy session. It's time to get that that's been balled up and built into you. You can come to the airwaves on a Tuesday and Thursday night with us at No Covers and discuss topics and subjects and issues that have been prevalent in your mind, things that have been bothering you all week, the things that you went through today. Things that you see in society that you want change. It's a time to uncover that. It's a time to express yourself. It's a time to come out clean. It's a time to stop hiding the lies. We have been lied to so much about our history, our culture, our religion. We've been lied to so much about who we are as a people. We've been lied to ourselves, and then that lie has been perpetuated itself down to our children. And our children don't even know who they are. So No Covers is time to uncover that truth, to make sure that we know who we are going into 2013. We had this show on last year for about 6 months, and it did well, and we had to go through some difficulties and had to take it off the air because we had to figure a way to keep it on that we could stay on a consistent basis. But we thought we built ourselves a good background, a good studio where we could work with some things. This is the second show that we've done this year that we're doing on a remote site. Inshallah, next week we will be in a permanent position because we will have our technical difficulties out the way. So as we go to the next show, if we have any difficulties, if you have any difficulty appearing, you can email me. You can find us at nocovers.org. You can find us at No Covers on Facebook. You can text messages. We've got our chat room now, and it is now open. We just opened up the chat room, so you can text messages in the chat room. If you want to comment, again, you just go to 858-947-6607, press your button, and we can communicate with you if you want to talk. Then we'll push you on and bring on your comments as we get into Django. We've got about an hour or so minutes on this ad tonight, and we want to discuss Django. I dedicated the show to this. I wanted to do it Tuesday night, but those of you that know, have been on the show before, you know that I am an official member of the Nation of Islam. So therefore, any time that we have a program that conflicts with that, I will never have anything that conflicts with the programming of the Nation of Islam, and I won't come into conflict with those programs that are going out. So we have a special program on the Nation on Tuesday night, so we postpone the show to Thursday night, due to our respect and our love for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. With that being said, I also have to put out a disclaimer for the show, that this show is not an official program of the Nation of Islam, but it's only a member of the Nation of Islam that is trying to do the best that he can do within the limited resources and the limited time that I have here on this earth and the talent that I may have to try to share with you some of what I have learned through my years of experience in this world and in society and try to uncover some truths and to try to take these airwaves, this social media network, to another level. I was smiling the other day when I heard the minister say that we should take to the airwaves and be about trying to get information out there in clear information as possible that we can present to the community in an enlightened way. We, these shows that we are on the air, if you come on the air on the show, understand a third disclaimer, that we do record the shows. And the reason why we record the shows is so many people are on the social media network and the time is passing us by so fast that we don't have time. So we set the show for 8 o'clock at Tuesday and Thursday nights. A lot of folks want the information but may not be able to come in at that time. So we do distribute. We replay the shows at a different time on the social media network. We record them in our archives where people can come and look in our archives on Blog Talk Radio and find the shows. And we also high-speed dub them. We duplicate and edit the shows and pull out the good information, and we condense them down into a series of CDs, and so that our young people who may not have the time or convenience or may not want to sit still long enough, they can put them in their cars and listen to some of the information that we send out here on the airwaves. So let's get into our topic tonight, Django. When I first heard about this movie, I first heard about the movie on a Saturday Night Live clip, and they wanted to make light of the movie from the beginning. I watched the Saturday Night Live clip with Jamie Foxx on it, and it caught my attention because he said he was making a movie in which he get to kill up white folks. And at that time, it was in the middle of the presidential election, and I noticed that the good Republican friends took what he said to heart and made a political statement out of what he had said. And that was first caught my attention to the movie Django, and to that this blockbuster, what they call a blockbuster, was coming out. And I guess you can officially call it a blockbuster because as of January the 9th, 2013, Django has grossed $112 million. We've almost headed to $113 million in sales in the month that it's been out. The budget for Django was a mere $75 million to $100 million budget. They came in under budget. And so they have already made their money back, everything that they're making now off of sales, off of the DVDs would come out, the characters that you've seen, probably the Django dolls that are out, everything that has come out now is above budget, so they are making profit from this day forward. The film has been paid for, the actors have been paid, the studio time has been paid, the production costs have been paid, shipping has been paid, so it's straight cash to the bank now, ching ching, they are making a profit. As of 2 weeks ago, everything that they make on this movie is in the profit mode. So that means every DVD that will be sold later, every syndication that will go into production later, every international sale that will go into sales later will be money for the big screen media. Now, that's the first thing that's interesting to me about the movie Django. Criticism came from some of our black directors about this movie. And I think sometimes that criticism came from the fact, especially from Mr. Lee. Mr. Spike Lee pretty much knows that if he had did the movie Django, the movie would not have, been, first of all, received a $100 million budget. Probably would have received something like $25 million to $30 million to make. And the third thing he knows is that it probably would not be in the profit margin at this point. It probably would still be in the red. A lot of times, our black directors and our black actors face this because we're dealing with Hollywood. We're dealing with first an entity. And let's make this clear because the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has made this clear for us. We're dealing with an entity who does not have the best interests of us as black people. I'll repeat that again. We're dealing with an entity, Hollywood, the movie industry, that is controlled mostly by the Jewish population. And they do not have our best interests at heart when they produce films. However, sometimes they plan, and sometimes God plans. He plans all the time, and he is always the best of planners. So sometimes as they plan, good things can come out of what they plan. Second thing I want to discuss is going through the movie is the news media this morning. Because sometimes things happen and you can see right away how this project or this idea of Django is going. The Academy Award issues what they call Oscars. The little man is just on the statue. When Django was first heard of, it was said that there was a possibility for it to do what they call a sweep. And that was, for the first time in a long time, the movie would probably be nominated and get Best Picture. They thought it would get one of the best supporting actors, if not two. They thought it would get at least one Best Actor award. So that would be Jamie Foxx being nominated, DiCaprio being nominated, Samuel L. Jackson being nominated, and the movie itself being nominated for an Oscar. That was the initial buzz in Hollywood. That was what was felt. It was believed that that was going to be the how the cards played out. This morning, the Academy Awards released the nominations for Oscar. And let's look at the Oscars nominations. Jamie Foxx, no nomination. Django, the star lead character, Jamie Foxx, received no nominations for an Oscar. DiCaprio, who played Mr. Candy, Calvin Candy, from Candyland Plantations, received no Oscar nominations. Stephen, which was played by our great brother Samuel L. Jackson, who, as the minister says, he played Tom to the Tom. He played Tom to the max. That great performance that Samuel L. Jackson did, the character that he played, how he took on the character and embraced the character of Stephen, played by Samuel L. Jackson, received no Academy Award nominations. However, the movie itself, Django, did receive one Academy Award nomination for Best Picture. It received an Academy Award nomination for Original Screenplay, and it received an Academy Award nomination for Cinematography and Sound Editing. What I found interesting in the whole scenario of the awards, because it did receive five nominations, the one character that received an nomination for Best Supporting Actor was played by Christopher Waltz, who played Mr. Schultz. Mr. Schultz, as you know, and if you had went to watch the movie, Dr. King Schultz was the gentleman who trained Django and who befriended Django and helped Django in trying to retrieve his wife. So the slave owner doesn't receive a nomination. Samuel L. Jackson, who played the Tom to a max, doesn't receive your nomination. Django, who killed up white folks on screen like never before, never sees a nomination. But the Good Samaritan white man who came to the rescue of Django and freed him from slavery, Lincoln in disguise, receives a nomination. See, this is typical of America. This is typical of how things get played out. They don't want to give the awards to who the awards were due because it will enhance the roles. See, when you see DiCaprio, who played Calvin Candy, my wife brought this to my attention when she was explaining to a group and explaining to me the most important scene of the movie is when Candy, Calvin, Mr. Calvin Candy, takes that skull out of the box and he looks in the back of the skull, and he goes with the three notches, and he gives a scientific explanation. That was a scientific explanation, really a dissertation on why blacks should be humble, why blacks were born, made to be humble, why blacks should always be in servitude. He broke it down scientifically, the same way they do with IQ tests, the same way they have done with brain studies in the past, the same way they do with psychology, the same way they did with the bell curve. He was breaking down scientifically that we are born, bred, made to be servants of white folks. And he portrayed that to the letter. His portrayal of how he sat there and watched two African Mandingo warriors wrestle each other to the death, breaking bones and gouging eyes until one just was incapacitated and couldn't move anymore. Now he watched it with pleasure and enjoyed it. DiCaprio played that master just like the master played himself in 1555. His relation with his mistress and his relationship with his sister, how his relationship with women is that they were just toys for his pleasure, and his sister did his bidding to keep the other women in check. He played that to the max. How Mr. Candy, when he found out he had got played, how he rose with anger and rose with venom, knowing that somebody else had played him, how he was ready to almost kill because he was upset. See, DiCaprio played that so much that it came out real, just like it was coming off the pages of black history, just like it was coming off the pages of the plantation. He played that to the max, but the Academy Award said, no, we don't want to award his portrayal of that because it would seem too much to be the truth and the reality of the way white America has played black America from 1555 to 2013 today. Game had changed. The characters have just changed. The characters has just changed. The game remains the same. Mr. DiCaprio's failure to get a nomination tells me that Hollywood wants to continue to keep the myth that slavery wasn't as bad as it was, that somehow we should be glad for slavery, or that somehow slavery did blacks a favor. See, the rejection of the Academy Awards by giving DiCaprio an award for that continues to put the myth out there that there wasn't bad slave owners, that slave owners didn't go to that extreme. But the truth and the reality is that Mr. DiCaprio, what he played, was just a tip of the iceberg, according to some of the atrocities that have been recorded in the annals of black history of what happened on the slave plantation. The mothers that were slit through their bellies and the babies that were dragged out of their bellies and stomped in front of the slave eyes. It was more than just Mandingo's warring. See, the atrocities that were given and placed on black people on that plantation and any other plantation, a black man being viciously eaten to death by dogs while people sat and watched, and slaves were meant to sit there and watch. And old good Mr. Cannon just smoked his cigar and enjoyed and savored every moment of a man getting gouged to death, all because he wanted to run away from having to kill his brother and fight his brother and go to war with his brother and gouge his brother's eyes and break his brother's bone. He had had enough of destroying his brothers. He just wanted to run away, so he was no good to Mr. Candy anymore. So Mr. Candy just fed him to the dogs, just like he do with blacks today. When he tired us, he just feeds us to the dogs. Yeah, Mr. DiCaprio should have got an award from a nomination from the Academy Awards for his portrayal of Mr. Candy, because he played Mr. Candy with such pleasure The smile that Mr. Candy had on his face as he pounced around the dinner table and he had everybody bowing to his wishes, and the way he talked with Uncle Tom, Mr. Stephen, and had him in character. Yes, Mr. DiCaprio should have got an award for that particular portrayal. So I say the Academy Award has failed us once again by not awarding Mr. DiCaprio a nomination. And what about Tom? What about Samuel L. Jackson? No nomination? Mr. Oscar, please, no nomination? Stephen, no nomination? Not even a mention, not even an honorable mention to the Academy Awards? He played Tom like nobody else had played Tom in history. Tom. Who that down that night? Tom, the good loving slave who loved his master more than he loved himself. We sick, boss? Boss, we sick? Tom hated Django. Stephen hated the sight that Django would come riding on the master's plantation on a horse with his back erect. If you notice in the movie, Tom always strolled around. Tom O'Samuel played it so well. He rolled around and strolled around with his back always bent. That's Tom. Always lower than the master's head. Always with his back with a little shuffle and a little strut as he strolled around. The head Negro in charge. The head nigger of the plantation. He was the head nigger of the house, and he kept all the other niggas in check. That was his job. Tom's job was to know who running away, who had the thought of running away, who even thought about getting over on the master. See, that's all Tom was mad about. Tom saw a chance to get in with the master and get in himself a little more brownie points with the master. Tom had his head so far off the master's ass that that's just where he was at. And all the thing he wanted to do was just get closer to his master, closer to his master, closer to his master. So the moment he found out that Django had other intentions, he was obligated. No, he was duty-bound. No, he felt loyal. The only thing he had to do was sit master down and say, "Master, you getting played." He didn't even think about Django's freedom. He was mad that Django was free because he would never see freedom. It was too old. He was too far in love with his master. He couldn't even understand. He couldn't spell freedom. The fact that Django would come take this pretty, lovely lady from the plantation, from his charm and from his grips and from his control of the master, that he would take her away for $300, even though that would have been a fair price. No. He didn't want that to happen because he wanted the master to know, "I got your back, master. I'm not going to let these people belittle you. I got your back, Master Candy. I'll do whatever thing you want to do, Master Candy. I'll sell Django down the road, Master Candy, because I don't love myself. I hate myself that much." When he looked at himself, he hated himself. He couldn't stand himself. And he had become accustomed to being a nigger. See, that's what they did in slavery. When they took the slaves from the African stock and moved them to the nursery plantation, that nursery plantation raised children who became teenagers, who became adults, who became old Toms, like Stephen. Just an old Tom. All he knew was slavery. Oh, he had no fault of his own. See, we look at the Tom, and we get mad at the Tom. Yes, that's what we do. Oh, we hate a Tom. Oh, we hate a Tom. We hate a Tom. Because we look at him with despise. We look at the Tom with hatred. How could you sell Django down the road? How could you sell out? How could you sell out people out like that? How could you not care about yourself? How could you not know that you're black? How would they know unless they have a teacher? And how would they have a teacher unless he be sent? See, Tom don't know.
Tom didn't know then, and Tom don't know now. Tom is under the illusion that he's free. Tom is under the illusion that his master loves him. Tom is under the illusion. Tom is the worst black that we have because he sells blacks out unknowingly. He doesn't even know who he is. The Tom doesn't even know himself. He doesn't know history. He knows only what the master taught him from the nursery plantation that has been ingrained town through generation. So when you see the Tom today, know that you're looking at a dead piece of wood. A Negro, a black man, a nigga that's just so dead, he doesn't know himself. The knowledge of self which shell shocks through his body. It may shock him. You have to, when you're dealing with a Tom, you have to feed them every so carefully. You have to feed them very slow. You can't give them too much because it would overload a Tom circuit. Like Friday brain. You have to give a Tom knowledge in bits and pieces. Because if you give them too much, they'll go off. I want to know how to handle it. Because they have been trained, bred, to be nothing but a sellout to the slaves. A sellout to black people. A sellout. And sell them down the river. So Samuel L. Jackson took on the role, and he said in one of the commentaries, he wanted to play it so well that he would be the most hated Negro on the planet Earth. And believe me, that Tom picture, every time I see that Tom, I don't even see Samuel L. Jackson in the same light anymore. I see him, I see Tom. That picture, that face, that Tom will be forever etched in me that I don't become like a Tom and sell our people out, that I will always continue to give our people the truth. So Samuel L. Jackson, no award, no nomination. No honorable mention? Come on, Mr. Oscar. Come on, Academy Award. See, you don't want our people to know. You don't want your own people to know that Samuel L. Jackson played that role to the T because you don't want to know, you don't want it to be known that that kind of man exists. You don't want white America to know that we see some of our leaders in that light. And that some of our leaders behave in that light. And you don't want that to be known because it may change. See, awarding Samuel L. Jackson for that role as the best supporting actor or giving him that award will tell the Toms that people study you and watch how you act. And it may change the Tom behavior. And America depends on her Toms in Congress, her Toms in the Senate, her Toms in politics, her Toms in the business industry, her Toms over there at Cornell and GE, her Toms at some of the big social medias in colleges and universities, the Toms that fail the students as radical, the Toms that fight in party that might have a little grievance or disagreement, the Tom that's always running to the master telling the plans of those that want to be free. So America depends on that Tom today. So how dare the Academy Award give them an Oscar for the playing of a Tom, because you might cause my Toms to stop being a Tom. There was no surprise in the day's announcement. DiCaprio, no award. Samuel L. Jackson, no nomination. And Jamie Foxx, Django? You gave the movie Best Picture nomination, but no Best Actor? For Django? No. See, if you didn't give an award to DiCaprio for The Slave Master, and you didn't give an award to Samuel Jackson for playing Stephen the Tom, and you gave an award to Christopher Waltz, who played Mr. Schultz, the friend. Oh, no. I should have known you wasn't going to give an award to Jamie Foxx for playing Django. The man who killed more white folks than I've seen any black man killed on a movie screen ever. The man who was just relentlessly shooting them up. The man who just took a whip and beat a, see, let's go to that. At that there, I have to stay on that one for a second because every time I think about it in my head, it replays. Yes, that was third. When he took that whip. See, I if you were in the movie and you've been through the pain of living in this country for the last 49 years,
when he took the whip, and he took the whip and whipped. See, I grew up watching Roots. I remember having to go to school after we watched Roots. I remember crying when we watched Roots. So when he took the whip, and he just whipped and whooped him and whooped him, yes, that was Black therapy. It was Black therapy. You could feel your soul just vitalized because you said, ooh, ooh, ooh. Yeah. Took some of that pain and Roots away. So, of course, no. It wasn't going to give Jamie Foxx an award who was just riding around as a free man, riding around killing whites as a free man, riding around on a nab as a free man. That's the first time I ever heard a horse called a nab, and I've looked this over and over again, and I think this was called a nab. Riding around as a free man, just shooting up white folks. No, he could not get an award because that would send a signal too far. It would send a signal of too much freedom. It would send a signal some blacks out here that might have guns and might get another idea. So no, of course not. No, no, no. The Academy Awards decided that they were giving supporting actor awards to what would continue to keep the status quo, the good Samaritan white man. The white man who came to Django's rescue. The white man who was portrayed as Django's savior. The man ain't saved Django from nothing. It was Django who saved himself. But they would have you believe that this man saved Django. No, this man saved Django. Django and his relationship was about economics. Django's relationship to Mr. King Schultz, wrapping up for the night, is what I want to talk about. See, in the movie, it have you so wrapped up that sometimes you can't see through the whole movie. The movie has the relationship to Django and Dink the King Schultz as a relationship of beneficiary on both parties. It has it as a beautiful love relationship where Mr. Schultz loved and cared for Django so much that he had a compassion for Django that he would help Django go back and get his wife. That he took Django on as this adopted son, I would say. That he formed a bond and a relationship with Django. The movie have you, it has you caught up in their quote unquote love affair with each other, in their ability to try to handle and go after the bounties, but at the same time train Django up so that he can accomplish his goal. It has you thinking that Mr. Schultz is Django's friend when in actuality, Mr. Schultz is just another white man who's taking advantage of the situation. But let's look at it. The movie doesn't have to show it that way. But look at the relationship from the get-go. Oh, yes, Mr. Schultz shoots up the slave master and then kills the horse of the other slave master and lay it down. But why did he do it? Had Django not had something that he had, would he be doing that for the other slaves? Why? What was his purpose in shooting up the slave master? What was his purpose in getting Django free? His purpose is because only Django knew, could physically recognize those that he wanted to collect bounty of. So the relationship between Mr. Schultz and Django started out as it always does, a master-slave relationship, and it just changed. Django was unchained now, but he still was a slave to Mr. Schultz because Mr. Schultz needed him to identify those ones who they could let the bounty on. And what did he offer Django in return? He offered Django his freedom, $75, and a horse. His freedom, $75, and a horse. That is what he offered him initially. But oh, when Django shot the Ku Klux Klan riding on a horse. Oh, if you go to that scene, Django is riding and he's sitting there with the rifle and the man is riding through and Mr. Schultz said, "You want to shoot him?"
and Django gets the gun. This is when the relationship between Mr. Django and Mr. Schultz changed. And Django looks, and he says, I got him. And he says, I got him, and he pulls the trigger, pow, and the man falls off the horse. Mr. Schultz says, he's a natural. At that point, the relationship between Django and Mr. Schultz increased more to be a master-slave relationship, because now Mr. Schultz knows that the original bargain to give Django his freedom and a horse, he would have to manipulate that and change that, because now he needed Django to be his natural born killer. So now the relationship changes when he offers Django to split the bounties with him that he only knows the price of, to split the bounties with Django that he only knows the bounties of, to be his natural born killer to go after killing white folks. Therefore, that if Django ever, if anything ever happens, he would always come off scot-free, and Django would be the one in jail and lynched and hung up and burnt for killing a white man, because now Django is doing the shooting and Mr. Schultz is collecting the bounty. How beautiful a slave-master relationship without change. No, Django's not free. He's just become a slave for a master who's using mental slaves versus physical chains. That's how it always works, and that's how it works today. We think we're free. We're not free. We're just under mental slavery all over again. Mr. Schultz's relationship with Django is no more different than Mr. Cannon's relationship with Mr. Steppen. It's just they speak better to each other. They act better to each other, and they think they have a mutual relationship with each other, but no, they don't. The situation is no different. Mr. Schultz's situation with Django changed the moment he found out that Django can kill. Now listen what he does. Instead of giving Django his freedom at $75 and a horse, he goes into a relationship with him and says, oh, Django, I need you now. See, he needs Django. And he needs Django because in his mind, Mr. Schultz is saying himself, look how many bounties we can go around collecting. But I know until Django gets this thing settled with his wife, Django's not going to be able to think straight. So I need Django to think straight. I need Django to think like the nigga he was made when he was in those chains. So what do I need to do? I need to get Django to his wife as quickly as possible so that he can get that relationship back established and out of the way, so I can get Django back out here collecting these slaves, these bounties for me, so I can continue to make money. How do I know this to be true? Because, Mr. Schultz's relationship changed down the way. When Mr. Schultz found out that Mr. Candy intended to milk him dry for Broomhilda, Mr. Schultz lost his mind. See, Mr. Schultz went into the Candyland plantation thinking that he was going to pay $300 and get Broomhilda free with a little game and have Brain Django playing character. And once he got Broomhilda free, Mr. Schultz had figured, hey, I got Django right where I want him now. Django got his wife, and me and Django going to ride around this country called America, and we're going to collect bounty after bounty. And all I got to do is send Django home every few months and see his wife, and we can keep collecting these bounties, and I can be the richest man in America. But when Mr. Candyland played him, when Mr. Candyman changed the table, and he said, no, instead of $300,000, I want that $12,000 that you promised me. Well, Mr. Schultz looked and said, wow. When he signed those papers for Broomhilda, you could see his hand shaking. Here he was fooling around with Django, and he had lost all of the money that he had saved up. He was going to pray in his mind all that money for what he considered a witch. He had to pay all that money. He lost his mind. And so when you see Mr. Schultz shooting Mr. Candyland, he really wants to shoot Broomhilda and Django.
He really wants to shoot them because he got into a relationship too far over his head. And now his plantation is gone. What do I make of that? Well, let's look at America today. America today is Mr. Schultz. Situation is now changing. Situation is now changed. Me and my wife had the privilege a couple of weeks ago to sit with three white people, two gentlemen and one female, some very well-to-do people. We had a chance to talk to them about racism in America. We came away from that meeting realizing that everything in Django that we see, all of the subplots and plots, is America going on today. America is about to become like Mr. Schultz. Mr. Schultz's character exploded when it realized, and he realized, that Django was actually free. Now, Django was about to walk off that plantation. Mr. Schultz was going to have no money, and Django was going to have his horse, his freedom, and his wife. And America today is going through the same turmoil because America today is realizing that the black man is free. And the freer we get, the freer black America gets, the freer we become, the more and sick that white America gets. We had a white lady that was 60 years old. We were explaining to her the state of black America and the state of America, white America, and how they are entwined, how they are tied together, and how quickly black America is rising and how quickly white America is falling. And we explained it to them using the arguments of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the arguments of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, along with common sense. And as we sat there in that room with those white people and explained to them that in actuality that their world was coming to an end, white woman looked at me and she said she didn't feel too good. I could really sense what she was saying. White America is having a problem with their world dying. And they don't know how to handle it. They don't know how to take it. And they don't know what's next. They're living in a police state coming. This movie is captivated audience around. Children that go watch it applaud it. They get happy. We know we saw it. Young people that watch it, they understand it. They understand the relationships of it. The movie in itself is gross, a ton of money. But it has spurred the conversation that what happens when this young black America changes and becomes Django Unchained. As I was explaining to the folks last week, black America is like a pie. And there's 8 slices to that pie. When you have 8 slices to the pie, there are 12 people in the room. If there are 8 slices to the pie and there are 12 people in the room and each person is to get a slice of pie, that means only 8 people will get a slice of pie. The other 4 will have no slice. At that moment that the other 4 have no slice of pie, those 4 have 3 options. 3 options. And if you can think of a 4th one, please email me, write me, call it into me, because I haven't thought of one yet. The first option that those 4 people in the room who did not get a slice of pie have is that they can wait, beg, borrow, and ask for those of the 8 in the room to give them a piece of their pie. Option number 1, the 4 people that did not get a slice of pie can beg. They can ask, they can march, they can sing, they can do whatever to draw attention to themselves. They say, we have no pie. Please, master, give us a slice. For the last 400 years, white America has done just that. They have given black America a slice of a pie that they assume is theirs. They have given black America crumbs from a pie that they assume is their pie. So they have ratcheted it out to Black America as they see fit. However, as I explained to our good comrades in the room, the day of rationing out that pie has changed. White America no more wants to ration out its pie. White America wants the pie to itself because it cannot afford to keep rationing out the pie to Black America and have in it for itself and its children. Its jobs are going. Its economy is falling. The country's system is in chaos. So now they have to hold the pie to themselves. That is the representation of the Tea Party. That is the representation of the Republican Party. That is what conservatism means. It means stop wasting the pie on them niggas and let's keep the pie over here in white America to ourselves. So option number one, for those blacks who have been conditioned to beg, scratch, to keep asking for pie, option number one is fading out. You will no longer get food stamps. You will no longer get housing. You will no longer get health care. You will no longer get jobs. You will have to find another way to get some pie because white America has no more pie for you. Option number two is what we may move to. However, option number two requires you and I to make our own pie. Eight slices of pie, four people didn't get a slice. They can go get the ingredients and make their own pie. That would be option number two. However, there's a problem with that option as well. With option number two, with four people trying to make their own pie, Black America has lost the ability to do for self. Those that have been proponents of do for self since Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and now the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, have always been pushed to the side by white America and pushed to the side by Black America as being radical or being a form of government that we don't want to follow. So being pushed to the side, Black America has not endorsed and embraced the love that these three had for Black America. Black America has rejected their love and will not follow the principle. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a great principle called the economic blueprint, where we would do for self. We would clothe ourselves. We would feed ourselves. We would nurse ourselves. We would take care of ourselves. But that idea was rejected, just like Booker T. Washington's idea of pulling ourselves up in the bootstraps was rejected from W.E. Du Bois way back when. So we have sucked on America's titty for so long that we have lost the ability to feed and breastfeed ourselves. We have sucked on her breast for so long that we had no longer to have the ability. Our trades are gone. Our carpentry is gone. Our welding is gone. Our agriculture is gone. Our working on the farm is gone. Doing for self is almost non-existent. So building our own pie is a problem, even though it's our second option. So what happens? Unfortunately, there is one more option. Fortunately or unfortunately, whichever way you see it. Whichever way you see it, it's happening. We're living in a generation right now who don't understand waiting for anything. We're living in a generation that has been created by Black America and white America. The generation has been created by Black America because we failed to educate and teach our own. We failed to build the pie that we should have built ourselves in the 60s. Instead, we integrated into white America, begging them for their own pie. So we've produced a generation of haters, a generation of beggars, a generation of give it to me right now. And white America is standing back on the sideline and not helping us do for self. White America is standing back on the sideline watching America decay, watching Black America decay. White America standing on the sideline pushing drugs into our community, locking our men up in jail, locking our women up in jail, not providing adequate care. White America standing on the sideline all of these years have produced a generation of what we have now, a generation sitting here that will take and take and take. And so as I told the young folks in the older folks in the room, this generation is going to take your pie. And that's what we're facing. We're facing that today. A generation that will take the pie They will begin to start Black America first. And as the minister said recently, that the stage is set. The stage is set. The stage is set for civil war. Those are my thoughts this evening on the movie Django. I see our callers listen. So those that were on, if you push the button, if you want to talk, just push the button, because sometimes I can get to going and look at the button. But if you push the button, if you want to comment, you push that one, it will light up, and then I will be able to get you on the air. Other than that, I will continue to host the show as I'm hosting, and I hope you've enjoyed listening to the commentary on Django. We will replay the commentary throughout the week because that's what we do. We make these tapes and share information with our public audience, and hopefully you enjoyed tuning in to us tonight on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back on Tuesday next week with our regular scheduled program. We've got a guest coming in next week from Wilmington. Our next week's program, we have a guest coming in that's going to bring his audience, our audience too, of young people. He's coming in to talk to us about some of the recent killings that's been going on in our Wilmington area. He's talking about some of the plight that young people face in finding jobs. And I'm going to ask him some direct questions so that we, as I guess old school, we try to find out what's going on with our young people. A lot of times we think we know everything. We don't know nothing. We found out the other day, I was thinking. But a mother out there, just a quick word of a comment. Go Get is a record call that's done. I was in a class the other day with some sixth graders, and they played this record called that done. And I asked them about it, and I want you to go out and research and get that record and play it so that you can know what your young people out here listening to. The record is about an exit appeal, and these were sixth graders that knew exactly what it was talking about. Don't drop that done. And as I watched the video the other day, I watched how subjectively our children are getting programmed and what we must do to continue to educate our children and get them back on the right path and the path towards good moral conduct. Once again, we appreciate those that did tune in listening. We're going to build our listening audience back up again. We're starting from ground zero. We were off the air for 6 months, and I'm working the first couple of months to get this technology under wraps before we go with the full advertisement. We did a little advertisement today, but we haven't went to our phone advertisement yet, and we will start that back up in the upcoming weeks as we make sure first that we have all the technical difficulties come out. We can listen to the shows and make sure all the kinks are worked out. And we're going to build this evening show back up to what we had today's show in, that we can have some lively and engaged conversation. Tune in on Tuesday, and have a good weekend. Stay safe. If you go to see Django again, take your notepad this time and follow up on some of the things and ideas that we gave you to follow up on. Tune in this Sunday to our nation national broadcast on NOI.org, and come out to your local mosque and study group and support the Nation of Islam program, the only program in America that is still alive, still doing for self, and the only solution for me for Black people in America. And that's not to slight any other organizations out there, not to take away from any other organization. But I love my nation, and I love the Nation of Islam, because I see the honorable Elijah Muhammad's plan. It's given to us by Master Farah Muhammad. It's withstood the test of time. Every other idea that has come has gone and faded away. This idea of doing for self has withstood the test of time, and we haven't tried. Really, as the masses of Black folks, we have never tried. We tried everything else. We tried marching. We tried singing. We tried begging. You know, we tried going to college. We tried the Child Attempt Theory. You know, we tried all those other programs. We tried. But the Nation of Islam, The program of putting down the alcohol, putting down the cigarettes, putting down the club, doing, putting up on the right, coming up on the righteous conduct, putting the reefer away, putting the dope away, taking care of our women, you know, taking care of our families, bringing them back in order, bringing moral conduct back in our community, building our businesses up, owning our own schools, owning our own factories, making our own clothes, feeding our own people. We never tried that. And what's going to happen is we're going to have to try it sooner or later. Because I believe that Allah is going to put us in a position, as black people, that it'll be our only solution. And so I sit and I keep working and I keep waiting. Because I know the day is going to come when all of us, as black people, are going to be free.
It's the mystery of iniquity.
Thank you for listening tonight. This has been No Covers on Block Talk
Radio. Of iniquity. That is the history of iniquity. When it all falls down. Handle the truth in a courtroom alive. Purges the jurors, witnesses.